Hello and welcome to another Ethical Corporation podcast. I'm Paul French, the China editor in Shanghai. I'm actually in a Japanese restaurant in Shanghai. So the sounds you hear in the background are my food being prepared. And I'm with an old friend, Graham Earnshaw, and he's ordered some food as well. So if we may, our food will arrive during this. This is sort of our first At Lunch With podcast, Graham, and you're here. Graham Earnshaw's been in China for a long time. He's done many, many things, including publishing. He's been a journalist. He's been a businessman, an entrepreneur of all sorts. But he's just written a book called The Great Walk of China, which is really a trip from Shanghai to Tibet. And he's been walking, not all in one go. He's been breaking it up and doing it bit by bit. But he's been really going through the countryside. Now, I write a lot for Ethical Corporation, but I very rarely ever go to cities that are small by Chinese standards, less than, 3 million people. Graham's been out in the villages. So I thought, as we talk a lot about people who move from the countryside to the city and to the factories, I thought we'd go the other way and talk a little bit about what's happening in the countryside. Because, there's still a lot of people left in China's countryside and they don't get talked about a lot. But Graham, tell us first, how did you structure this trip? Where exactly did you go? How did you do it?
Well, I started in Shanghai in 2004, and the idea was to basically traverse the whole country from Shanghai through to Tibet, but to do it in stages, because I'm busy, I got other things to do. The idea was to, every time I went out, to go back to exactly the last place, to the millimeter that I last stopped, and then continue on my way. And it's proved to be an incredibly rich experience. The process of starting and ending at a random spot, as opposed to the usual travel process of starting at home and then going to a temple or going to a definite and fixed location, it's an entirely different approach to travel, which I would highly recommend. The problem with going to a fixed location is that you and the people there already know what's going to happen, and so there's nothing fresh about it. It's basically a mind-closing experience. So I started walking, and I've been doing it now for 5 or 6 years, and I've passed through hundreds of towns, thousands of villages, and talked to many, many thousands of people, farmers, kids, grandmothers. It's changed my view on China. It's changed my view on life. It's been an extraordinarily rich experience, which I intend to continue for as long as I can keep walking, at which point I'll buy a Segway.
Now, we're always... these are the places where... my sort of factory workers that I write about a lot are all coming from originally.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're always told that one of the problems with the Chinese countryside is that as everyone goes to the urbanization takes place, people go to the cities, people go to the towns, all that's left in the countryside is old ladies and babies that people haven't taken with them. When you get out to the countryside, is China's countryside becoming this sort of depopulated, barren landscape that we hear quite often?
I wouldn't say necessarily barren, although many of the mountain areas, they really are returning vast areas of paddy field, terraced paddy field, back to nature, because nobody can be bothered to climb up the hills to actually cultivate them, which is a good thing. I'd say that China's countryside is, to a very large extent, being depopulated. I'd say that population growth in these areas at least has stabilized and is probably falling in terms of total population numbers. And the reason is that there's more opportunity in the cities. You can see it definitely in terms of the schools. Schools had schools that were, say, 1,000 kids 10 years ago are now down to 250. They're having to close buildings. There's no work for the teachers, who anyway would much prefer to be in Shanghai or Beijing. You can see that process of population leveling and then with a fall on its way. And I think overall, I think it's probably a good thing. I think that concentrating people in the coastal areas of China is probably better for all. It will allow these vast areas of central China to return to something closer to nature.
Okay, but the problem is, if these areas depopulate, there was already an issue with the provision of education. There was already an issue with the provision of healthcare.
Yeah.
Doesn't this just get worse if a village goes from 1,000 people to 250, and it was already remote to start with? I mean, don't they just end up with nothing? People being forgotten?
The other trend is that they're becoming more and more linked into the world thanks to mobile phones and motorbikes. Everybody has satellite TV. The poorest farmhouse is now watching crap television dramas on Tianjin satellite TV. There is more interlinkage of Chinese society now, and therefore more homogenization than has ever been the case in the past. And that's more of a bad thing, I think, than a good thing. People are interlinked. People have a better sense of the outside world because they talk to relatives and friends, and they've been there. They've been out of the village, which wasn't true of their grandparents and probably not true of their parents either. So they have something to compare their lives in the villages with. And in some ways it's better, some ways it's worse. Life in the villages is better in terms of clean air and clean food and lower stress levels. But then again, money is a good thing. And people in the end, particularly younger people, are going to drift off. The younger, the kids who are in their teens now will never plant rice. They're going to go straight from school to the factories.
But we're also hearing this thing that, you know, with the land reforms, which we've covered in Ethical Corporation, the farmers now more and more own their land, or at least, you know, can sell it on. I mean, what is the situation out there? Is there a reason for people not to move to the cities now? They don't feel that, you know, they're just sort of rentier farmers or hard scrabble farmers. That was why a lot of people went to the factories. Is there not a reason for people to stay in the countryside now?
You know, I've had many conversations with farmers, country people, about this issue of land ownership. My sense is that not a whole lot has changed. The fact is that they have sort of semi-ownership for as long as they're alive, but there is a strong awareness that the party has the right to pull the land away with basically no recourse by the farmers, and it's a strange. Time in terms of the land in China, that the farmers overall are losing interest in it because a very large proportion of them are heading off to factories. And so the people who are in the fields, working the fields, tend to be older. They're guys in their 50s and 60s.
And it's become like Japan.
That's exactly it, yeah. It's the same process, exactly. And so this issue of land ownership as a burning issue is no longer such a hot question for China because people have moved on.
So we've had a couple of generations of people moving from the countryside to the factories now.
Mm-hmm.
And yet one would have thought that with people going to the factories and coming back from the cities where the factories are and
yeah.
talking about their experience, people would be prepared for what happens when they move to Guangdong or when they move to other cities. And yet, you know, we've seen these terrible spate of suicides in Foxconn and elsewhere that seem to be related to people moving from the countryside and being alienated, that perhaps, you know, they're not quite ready for it. I mean, the only sort of Western equivalent I can find for it is sort of, you know, kids from small villages going off to university and not being, you know,
right.
finding themselves sort of swamped by life. Are you not surprised by this? Wouldn't you have thought that, you know, the tales of the city, if you like, would have filtered back into the villages and people would be more prepared for what happens to them when they go to places like Shenzhen?
They're aware of it up to a certain point. They deal with it by going in groups. There is people from a certain village or area will tend to drift to the same location. That is, Ningbo will be the target for a certain group of people, and Shenzhen in another. They tend to stick together. It's the continuation of the clan process of the past, and that provides a help network that can get people through. I'm not sure that this suicide thing was such a big deal. I think in terms of the huge numbers of people who work in the Foxconn company factory complex in Shenzhen that you're referring to. The suicide rate is in fact very low.
Yeah, their argument was that it was no more than in a town of comparable size.
I think that's right. I think in you know, life in China in general, you have enormous pressures and stresses compared to life in the past and life in the countryside. And these people are dealing with huge changes in their lives. And I think overall they're dealing with them very well. A proportion of them decide they've had enough, that this being a cog in the machine is not for them, and they go back to the village. And I think that we'll see more and more of that as time goes by. There's a balance to be achieved somewhere in the future.
You have a small charity, a literacy charity, Getting Books In. Do you want to give it a plug?
Yes.
You know, there's all sorts of little things that people may be interested in getting involved in.
Sure. China Reading Project is the name of the project, and the idea is to give books to schools in poor parts of China. When I walk through these towns, I try to seek out the teachers and the schools and say hi. And I ask about books and reading. When I'm with kids, I always ask if they read books. The answer almost always is no. Their grandparents, with whom they typically live, are illiterate. Their parents are not there. And the kids are watching television. And so there's none of the process that I went through when I was growing up of my mother reading Winnie the Pooh to me. There's none of the process of being inducted into the world of books. And so all I can do is to give books to the schools and hope that they find a way into the hands of the children. I think books have a very smart in this regard. They can do it. They can find a way of getting around all sorts of restrictions. In some cases, in many, we've delivered around 25,000 books now to 50 schools, and in many cases they put them. Sorry. Hello. Hey. Hey, Xiao Tang, ni hao. Ha 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 ha.
Okay. Anyway.
Yeah. I forgot.
So they've got, you're building a tradition of reading.
Yeah, that's right. And the books are very important in terms of getting a sense of the world beyond your own very narrow confines. And these kids at the moment only really have the opportunity to do that through television. And Chinese television, the quality is very, very low. And the aim with donating the books, as opposed to the money which they always ask for, is that I'm hoping that I can at least encourage a small proportion of these kids to become avid readers, as am I, and I'm sure many of the listeners too.
Okay. Thanks, Graham. I mean, just to give your book a plug again, Graham Earnshaw, The Great Walk of China, travels on foot from Shanghai to Tibet, from Blacksmith Books, and, it's if you want to look online, you can certainly get it online, www.blacksmithbooks.com. Graham, just finally, you're a man who likes a project. Now you've walked to Tibet. What's the next project? Ulaanbaatar? Or you're going to walk to Pyongyang?
I'm going to keep walking, and then I'm going to hang a Louis, and then I hang another Louis. I'm going to turn left and left again, and I'm going to walk back to the coast. And then I'm going to walk round the coast to Hainan, the peninsula that extends out to Hainan. And then I'm going to turn north and walk to Harbin. And after that, I'm not quite sure. But that'll take me through to around 2035. Come check in with me again then.
Yeah, okay. You do realise how far to the northeast Harbin is and how cold it gets up there. A December stroll in Harbin, outside Harbin, is going to be a fairly tough proposition.
I'll buy some extra woolies.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot. And thank you for listening. And we'll be back again with another podcast from China soon.